This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 225, brought to you by DCBS and Summit City Comic Con. Audible.com. Go to Audible.com/ifanboy for your free audiobook and a 14-day trial. And iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 225. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello there.
We are iFanboy.com, and we like comics. We read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one they read. They write it about on the website. We talk about it here on this show, along with the other books of the week and other topics of interest. It's a review show. So we like to reward you guys by reminding you that doesn't make any sense, but we're moving on. This is a review show. We'll be talking about the books of the week, and so there'll be spoilers. So skip the books you haven't read yet, or come back when you're done. It'll be more rewarding for all of you and for all of us.
But before we get started, Connor, are you in a suit in black and white with your hair slicked back, or you don't have any hair, but are you smoking?
Damn it. Yes.
Are you about to play jazz records?
I've decided to model my entire life after Don Draper. Got a pocket square.
And you got a fancy new microphone.
I did.
I feel like you could tell me a lot about Wes Montgomery and Miles Davis.
I am holding a tumbler meant for whiskey, but it's got water in it.
That's sad.
It's crystal. So here, you can hear it.
Nice.
There it is. So, right. Josh, you had the pick of this week.
Yes, I did. This was my first adventure in being a fathered pick of the weeker, and it didn't come out as early as I would have hoped. And that's all that
did
I
it change
about.
Your perspective on comics? Was your world different?
Listen, now everything's different. I'm going to start talking with real moral high fortitude and all that all the time. No. I read my stack of books, and it was one of those weeks where it wasn't immediately apparent what my pick was going to be. And I went back and forth, and I was between this, between Batman and Robin number 10 and Powers. Batman and Robin being something I read really early, and Powers being something I read really late. And then I remembered, I was like, wait a minute, when I read Batman and Robin, immediately, like, you can tell this is a thing, when I read something, and within a couple of pages, I feel the need to write something or tweet about it. Like those first three pages of Damien in the boardroom, I was just like, that was genius, and I wanted to tell the world. And I remembered that, and then I started thinking about all the other stuff I liked from the issue, and then it became very easy to me. I write the whole thing up. I go to the website, and I look, and I go, wow, this is overwhelmingly the pick of the week for the community, too. And that never...
Josh Flanagan, populist,
that
now
never,
that you're a father.
Ever, ever happens with me. So I was pretty pleased about it. And, you know, when I went to write the review... You know, things started popping up left and right that I really liked about it. And I don't know, I guess I found myself surprised because some of the, you know, I like Cameron Stewart, but I don't know if, for me, I don't know if his art fit very well with the stories. And then there was the tan incident.
The art here was great.
Yeah, it was. And more so than that, we start with the art by Andy Clark, is that, you know, he's no Frank Quietly. These panels are a lot less dynamic and a little more plain, but stylistically... between the pencils of Clark and Scott Hanna on inks, it really just looked like it fit in with the stuff that Frank Quietly did. The models.
Yeah,
of the characters.
when I read this, I found myself thinking, "Wow, I wish he'd been the guy to fill in the entire time."
Yeah,
because it really fits the world. It makes it really it's an indefinable aspect of the world that Quietly's created that really fits in. Tan's art didn't fit at all. Mm. Even Cameron Stewart's art, which was really good, didn't really fit like this one does.
Yeah. Well,
the styles.
Clark is he's a 2000 AD artist. I looked him up. And he'd just done, I think, the Rebels book for DC that people were very excited about that I didn't read. But, you know, it has those little scratchy hatch lines. I described it as a sort of a cross between Frank Quitely and Kevin O'Neill of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
It almost looks like etching.
Yeah. And it fit really well. There are a couple of pages where, like, Talia looked kind of strange in a couple of places. But besides that...
He aged her older than she should be, but other than that, it was looked good.
But besides that, like, the you know, Damien looked like Damien as he had in the first series, or the first three issues, and I really appreciated that. And even Dick as Batman had that. He just seemed slightly smaller, slightly more compact, a little different than Bruce as Batman.
Skinnier. Yeah.
And then, you know, it's, like I said, right away, my favorite thing about this in the first issue that I think I picked the first one as pick of the week, too, way back.
You did.
and my favorite thing about it was the relationship that was going on between Damian, Dick, and Alfred. And this was just more of that, but evolved. I love that Damian, as a character, had evolved in a little bit, that he's got this grudging acceptance and affection for Dick Grayson, and at one point, you know, they're starting to unravel these clues about how to find Batman, and that's another thing we're going to talk about, is sort of the plot that has been set up here. But, you know, at one point he just says, so if we find him, that means we don't get to be Batman and Robin anymore. And he's just like, he looks kind of sad, and Batman's like, I guess not. But, you know, you don't think he'd put up with you the way that I do. And then Damian got all sad, and he said, I'm joking. And he's like, no, you're not joking. And
so they have the best 1-2 relationship in comics right now, I think.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's very fully formed. It's very real. And it's evolved over these 10 issues, mm-hmm. these 10 months or however many months it's been. When these two started, everyone hated Damian. They wanted him off the book. And a lot of us said, you know, hold on. The whole point is you're going to get to like him eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the story arc. It's going to be about liking Damian. And we're getting to that point where he's still an insufferable little snot, but you start to like him.
But there's a glimpse of, you know, he's being a little more respectful to these other characters who you really like, and that's just that little chink in the armor, that little glint in the distance that there could be something more to this character.
Yes.
And it's fun. It's fun to watch that evolve. It's fun to hear these characters talk to each other, and it's, you know, to have them interact with Alfred. And then at the same time, you've got this the return of Bruce Wayne plot starting up, where you learn that Bruce is trapped in time, as we kind of knew, but he's been leaving clues. And they find secret rooms in the Wayne Manor, and there's all these portraits of male Waynes from the past, and they all look similarly, and of course that ties into some of those covers that we've been seeing, and it was
very masterpiece theater.
Yeah,
it was very like the giant gloomy mansion. They find a secret room. There's a suit of armor. There's a statue. There's a painting. There's a book. I loved it. It was very much like that old school detective, like Agatha Christie, Hercule Poirot sort of vein. I really enjoyed it, that aspect a lot.
Yeah, and it was just fun comics, and I just found myself, and it was the same thing that I thought earlier. You know, he's been really consistent in tone from the beginning of Batman and Robin up through here, Morrison, I mean, in that it feels like the same kind of comic, which doesn't feel like the same comic that he was doing on Batman before that or whatever else he was writing. Like, this just has its own flavor, its own vibe, and it's one that I've really enjoyed almost surprisingly, because it's just kind of whimsical. It's slightly whimsical. It's not quite realistic. It's fun. It's a little, like, it's got, like you said, it's got that mystery thing going on. It's just really good comics, and I think that, you know, as I wrote in my review, if don't get hung up on stuff and just read this for what it is. It, you know, it exists on its own. You don't have to read anything else. Just read this story and enjoy this for what it is, and don't get stuck on details and things like that. I'm not even sure if there are things like that, but it's just a stellar, fun read, and a really good, something looks like it's going to be fun. It was a great setup.
He's doing a really good job of weaving a lot of different elements into the plot. There's the back, you know, there's like not just A and B plots, there's C and D plots. There's the flashback to Talia, you know, brainwashing her son to kill Dick Grayson and then enacting that plot, and then there's Oberon Sexton the Gravedigger. We don't know what he's all about, but he's awesome.
Is that somebody who's Oberon Sexton the Gravedigger? That's a name. That's a wonderful, wonderful name.
And it's cool, and I think, you know, that's another mystery to try to solve. And he's got lots of different balls in the air right now, and so far it's all working. And especially, I thought this was the best issue since in the first three. This was by far, and I've enjoyed the last arc as well, but this was really great. This was like back. I mean, the last arc was sort of a diversion. They went to England. It was a fun arc, but this is sort of back on track to where we were in the beginning with Bruce and Damian, and then Dick and Damian working together trying to find Bruce. And I was really pleased with this one.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was kind of an easy pick when I thought about it, and I was actually really pleased to see that everybody else really liked it too. I thought that was like a nice collective experience. I think where everyone was sort of on the same page.
Now, you talked about Powers number three being your alternate pick or your close second, and I don't like to go in for comic book conspiracy theories because I often think they're baseless and people who just need something to talk about. But you cannot convince me that Brian Michael Bendis wrote Powers number three.
Why?
it was one of the worst things I've ever read from, definitely the worst issue of Powers I've ever read, and one of the worst issues I've read with Brian Bendis' name on it. It didn't have any crackling dialogue. That was very it thudded almost.
I don't know if I would go that extreme with. Well, first off, I thought, and it will go as we go. There's a theme. I think there's a theme throughout this week is that there's a lot of creator-owned, non-super. You know, like this was a big week for these kind of books, which I thought was interesting. But this issue felt off to me for some reason, and
way off, and
I don't know what it was. And the art, you know, on the art side, I mean, a lot of people have been raving about the car chase and the scene in the rain and the car flipping over and the panels with Walker's head flipping over and stuff like that. I thought it was all right. I still don't understand what the new Powers format is.
It's the same one. They're just using the same.
It's on the cover. It says all new story, new format.
It's said that since they changed over.
two issues ago.
No,
I still don't know what it is, though.
No, though, they started doing it before. It was when they switched to the
it's
longer
more pages.
Page
yeah, more pages.
It's not, anyway, but
and that was when in the I don't know the 30s or whatever. Well, I mean, the reason that I would have gone with it, I actually really loved the art in this one. I thought that this was pushing beyond. Like I've loved Oeming's art on this book all along, and I thought this was just pushing it in sort of a new fun direction. It just felt different to me. There wasn't much.
Yeah, everything felt different about it. I mean, yeah, there wasn't much story at all, and everything felt weird. And the art is different than what we're used to. But it's almost like it's Oeming's evolving in a way that I don't know. I'm not sure if it's a good direction. At least in my opinion, it feels a lot looser and a lot rougher.
Yes.
And I don't
know.
Not
polished like it used to be.
Yeah, and I don't know if I like it as much in that regard. But I thought the layouts were interesting. I thought I did think the art was challenging enough in the one scene, the car, you know, the car chase scene or whatever with the super proud villain chasing him was worth it. But yeah, and maybe you're right, Connor. Maybe it just felt off.
I read this book and then I read Ultimate Spider-Man, and I've been reading, you know, we've been reading Bendis books for over 10 years now, and I just, the dialogue did not seem like he wrote it. It seemed like somebody trying to write his dialogue. It didn't crackle. There wasn't the signature banter. And it's not that he can only write
that.
Banter there, but it wasn't like he wrote
it. Wait a minute. On the inside cover, it does say created by Brian Michael Bendis and Mike A. Von Oeming.
Yeah, it doesn't say who wrote it.
It doesn't say who wrote it. That's a very interesting theory, my friend.
I was halfway through this. I said, "Wow! First of all, he didn't write this."
I bet you he did the story. Mike Oeming wrote the dialogue. Because Oeming's been doing more and more writing. I bet you that's what's going on.
Yeah, I was really disappointed and I'm upset at the end of this because, you know, this has been one of my favorite books for 10 years. And at the end of this issue, I thought, "Wow, I don't want to read this book anymore."
Yeah, wow. We're through the looking glass here, Connor.
I'm glad I didn't pick it. I think you convinced me.
The dialogue is not there, and it's not, you know, Bendis is, if nothing, he's a dialogue artist, and it was just not there in this issue. It was every piece of dialogue was somebody calling somebody else a fucker or a cunt or a bitch, and
you know, it kind of reads like an Oeming book, to be honest. I think it about does. It because I've been reading
like that Cross Bronx Expressway book that we read.
Yeah, Cross Bronx, and I've been reading God Complex, and this and now that you mention it, Christ, I think they just pulled a fast one on us.
That's disappointing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you can tell
the art.
I
agree with Ron on the art. I think the art is different too, and it's not as crisp as if you look at the old Powers books. It's different.
Crispus aside, though, I really enjoyed the layouts. I thought it had a huge amount.
The
of
art
energy.
Is bigger. The art is big. There's more 2-page spreads and things like that. The art is much. I feel like it's you know, if that's the new format, okay, cool. Like it's bigger, and it definitely goes for a non-standard kind of comic book kind of layout type thing.
I felt like I got my 4 pages worth in terms of $4 worth in terms of that. I remember.
Well, it's 41 pages. 41 pages of story. There's no letters page or anything. Yeah,
totally. And I enjoyed that part about it.
All right.
But I didn't pick it. It wasn't quite there. And you know, you may have nailed it. There was a couple of clunkers in there. Like somebody's like, "Baby, please." I'm like, he didn't write that. Unless he was writing Luke Cage before he knew how to write black people. taking it way back.
Yeah, no, I don't think he wrote that. I really don't.
Wow.
Wow.
Conspiracy.
Over in DC, it was a big Batman week. We had a Red Robin Batgirl crossover with, they both came out this week, so we had parts one and two of the story, and I was really excited because I think Batgirl's a great book that not enough people are reading, and a lot of people are reading Red Robin, or at least comparatively, and I thought this would be a good chance for people to pick up Batgirl and really see how great it is. The problem was the normal Batgirl artist Lee Garbett, who's great, was not on the issue. Instead, we had Talent Caldwell.
Ooh.
And the result was that Stephanie Brown grew many cup sizes, and she got a couple of injections of stuff into her lips, and it was very distracting and very disappointing. And I opened the issue and I was sort of went, "Ugh." You know, because Lee Garbett has been doing this great, you know, in the same way that Power Girl is like a real woman, it's similar to the art style on Batgirl. She's been a real girl, athletic, you know, the frame you'd expect an athletic young girl to have, and here it's just, you know, boobs everywhere, and it was just like, oh, disappointing. And then we got to Marcus Toe on Red Robin, who used to be the inker and is now the penciler, and he's great, and he draws her more like a real girl in this issue, in the Robin issue, so the change was jarring from part one to part two, and just disappointing. The story was fantastic. I think they've gotten over the hump of everybody being mad at Stephanie Brown, and they've finally gotten over that, and everyone's sort of come to terms with the fact that, you know, she lied about being dead. Oh, we're over that now. So I think if you wanted to get the story was fantastic. The art in Red Robin is fantastic. The art in Batgirl was not so good, but overall good stuff. And if you like sort of sexy banter between two exes, that's what you had in this issue, and it was really fun. And if you don't read Batgirl, but you did read Red Robin, you should check it out anyway.
And cool. Yep. So so Criminal number 5 came out and similar with the theme of powers and some and these other kind of creator-owned books. And I haven't really been jazzed about Criminal in a while. Like this arc has been all right. It's been, you know, even with the return of the character that I kind of knew, I haven't really felt like the excitement that I originally felt with it.
I didn't get it and I didn't notice. And then I was like, eh, I'll get it later.
Right.
Which was this book.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought this issue was, I don't want to say back to form, but was exactly what I want out of this.
No,
this
I think you're right about back to form. This was, yeah. I feel the same way. I've been not down, but less enthused by Criminal lately. But with this issue, I finished it. I went, yeah, that was good. I really like this.
This had violence. It had a scheme. It had a double cross. It had everything I would think when I think of like noir, you know, kind of hard, you know, hard boiled kind of story.
And then an ending where you go, oh,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I really like this issue a lot. This was a fantastic. This is one of the best Criminal issues in a while.
And also on the art, if you look at it, you know, Sean Phillips did some fantastic 9-panel grid based riffing.
Yes.
If you look at the layouts, it's all those three rows, and sometimes he goes 9-panel grid, sometimes he goes a little bigger or smaller. But it was just like this is what I want out of Criminal every month. This issue.
So, yeah. This was back to a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Years
totally. Ago.
Like the sad thing is, if you read the back page,
kiss it goodbye.
They're off for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be at least till the end of the year before we get another issue of Criminal.
If that, because yeah, Sean Phillips is going to do Dark Tower stuff for Stephen King. So.
And then they're doing Incognito, and it's going to come back after Incognito.
So it's going to be next year. It's not going to be, yeah.
But yeah. This was great. I really like this
one. They have to make money.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I understand that.
I know. It's just disappointing. You know, they got to do Incognito to actually sell money because that sells twice as many.
Well, they got to do Incognito, but he's gonna go do Dark Tower because that'll make more money than any of this.
Oh yeah,
and that's what I can't stand about the Stephen King stuff and stuff like that is that these it sucks in these and this is a personal thing. Like I have no interest in the Dark Tower comics or the Stand or the Nth or whatever it is, and they pull in these great artists that are like, oh yeah, they're fantastic, and I haven't seen Jay Lee. In years, I haven't seen Mike Perkin in years. We're not going to see Sean Phillips for a year. It's just going to be like, damn it.
Yeah, but if you think about them. It, good for them. B, these are comics that are going to other people. And
sure, yeah. No, I get it. I'm not questioning it.
Isn't it cool that those guys, that like they chose those kind of artists for this kind of stuff? Like the people they're going to take to the sort of the more mainstream artists are guys like that who aren't really, you know, like huge names in comics. They're critically big, you know, people like us, but it's not David Finch.
Right, yeah, exactly. So.
Well, I liked in the back page where it said where Brubaker said hey, we're going to be taking a break so Sean can draw Dark Tower. Sean busted and says, I thought we were taking a break so you could write Avengers.
That's interesting.
So, you know,
conspiracy number two.
No. I mean, it's just that, you know, they both have to go do the work that actually pays the bills, which is not Criminal, which is too bad. But I liked the last part of The Sinners. It was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. On the other end of the spectrum,
I'm wondering you added this to the show, and I want to know.
Well, I'm just okay. I'm fascinated by the Justice League of America and DC Comics right now, in the same way that I'm fascinated by
a car wreck.
It's like the Justice League of the American Democratic Party.
It's so
they just can't get it to work out.
Ron, this was a bad issue.
This was a bad issue on multiple levels.
This is Justice League Rise and Fall Special #1.
I picked it up purely on hearing good things about J.T. Crawl and hearing good things about Mike Mayhew. What I didn't know was that this one shot was spanning across three different artists: Mike Mayhew, Diogenes Neves, and Fabrizio Fiorentino. So the art change was jarring and unexpected and nonsensical for me. Yeah. But basically this deals with the aftermath of Cry for Justice, and it picks up where after Green Arrow murders Prometheus and basically the rest of the Justice League finds out. And this is like, I was just like, I don't know what am I reading? This is not, this is like not the, and now like, and for a moment I almost can understand the people who freaked out when Identity Crisis came out. like the diehard Justice League fans who were like, this isn't the Justice League I know, and like all this kind of stuff. Not that they were right, because Infinite Crisis was good, but this is just like at the end with Barry and Hal yelling at Ollie, like completely out of character, and like how it ends with Barry, we have to stop him before he kills again.
This is a mess.
It's a total mess. And the Mike Mayhew art was not good.
None of the art was good.
Yeah.
This was a mess on all levels.
Just like on every level, like on everything. And I really, you know, and I'm pulling for DC as the underdog. Like I want the Justice League to be the best DC book. I want it to be like the keystone book of the whole line. And I know it's not, but I just don't know what are they doing.
Apparently, nobody at editorial agrees with you. They're not pulling for it. They're like, just whoever. It's fine. They got Dwayne McDuffie, who really wants to write it. No, you're not allowed to.
Yeah, you know, and I know James Robinson's, you know, has a plan and is going to take, you know, the new league in a different direction, stuff like that. But this whole Ollie Green Arrow snapping, killing people thing just seems so, I don't know, like
90s.
Like '90s, and it also is kind of funny because they've got that two-page spread from Colgate Max Fresh celebrating great moments in DC Comics, and the moment is Extreme Justice number 16 from May 1996.
Yeah, I don't like those ads.
Yeah, I don't like those either. But it feels like they came up with this idea last.
So I don't mind him killing Prometheus because there's a reason it's in character. Like Prometheus killed, not only destroyed his city and killed his granddaughter. That makes sense. He'd kill him, but now he's going on this like Wyatt Earp after the OK Corral type killing spree where he's going to kill everyone involved, and it's just like
Ollie is,
yeah, and then it's and then Barry's getting mad at him, and Ollie says, "Well, you killed the Reverse Flash after he killed, you know, Iris, and well, that's not the same." It's just like
I feel like we've done this.
Yes, exactly.
They need to wipe the slate clean. That's what they had to do with Justice League, and they haven't. They just keep building on the mess they've already created. They just need to say, you know what, forget it. We're starting over.
And like, they're doing a very Marvel 5 years ago esque, you know, like the, you know, gray area between hero and villain, and what is right, what is wrong. You
sounds
know, and,
like Daredevil.
Yeah, yeah. To me, yeah. So
just not wipe the slate clean. Come Justice League number one. Start the story again. Don't worry about anything that came before, and just go. And that's what they need to do.
Yeah, just get, you know, give, you know, move into a new headquarters, reopen the Watchtower, like do whatever you need to. Yeah, do whatever you need to, but like make it clean. Just who even cares? Just stop all this. Just be like, oh, you know, like it's comics. Just forget about it. You know,
it's kind of like when I was re-looking through the Captain America, the Mark Waid one, where they brought it back to life, and they didn't explain it. They just said he's back. Don't worry about it going forward. They just need to do that with Justice League. We're going forward. Forget everything that's happened. That's what they.
Yeah, this whole thing. I mean, I was reading it on the bus, and I was giggling. I was laughing because both from the story standpoint and from the art standpoint. I mean, like I just couldn't believe. The how stiff Wally and Dick looked in the Flash Batman scene.
Oh, the color, and, the art was not good.
Oh, the art was not good. Yeah, not good. And then just the end of the ending, and just like the totally out of character arguing between Ollie, Hal, and Barry. It was just like,
it's been far too long since the Justice League was good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost 10 years at this point.
Yeah, that's sort of.
Well, maybe you're right, actually. I mean, I think there have been good Justice League moments in the past 10 years. I mean,
there's always good moments.
And admittedly, it's been around Meltzer. I mean, I think Identity Crisis is a high water mark. And I think also his 12 issue run, even though I don't think, Connor, you really liked it, but I think that had energy and juice to it, and it felt good, you know? I don't know. It's crazy. It's just crazy. So,
I was whiskey.
Yeah, well,
that issue again.
So if you are a fan of the Justice League and you don't want to miss a single issue of the train wreck, you should check out Discount Comic Book Service. You can get mail order comics, pick your comics online on their website. They'll ship them straight to your home. They package them up really nicely. They get them to you quickly. You can pick the different frequencies of orders. You can get weekly comics, biweekly, monthly. Get a big box of comics every month and get your fill. Or if you need them, get them weekly. That's cool. They'll do that as well. They've got monthly specials about the 75% off. They discount all the major publishers, at least 40% off on all the major publishers. That's awesome. And they've got a flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. I don't know how they do that, but it doesn't matter what you order. It's a flat rate of $5.95, which
one of those boxes.
One of those boxes. You can get anything that's in the previews catalog. It's basically a comic book store online, and they mail it to you. They've got, well, thousands and thousands of trade paperbacks in stock. You can track all your orders online, so check out their website at dcbservice.com. And the fine folks from dcbservice.com, or Discount Comic Book Service, are also putting together the Summit City Comic Con. If you live in the Fort Wayne, Indiana area, Midwest, if you live in the Midwest, sure. You can check out the Summit City Comic Con on May 22nd. You can get all the details at summitcitycomiccon.com. And they're going to have a ton of great artists. I believe Jim Rugg from Aphrodisiac is going to be there. So from our book of the month.
Again, go read the review on Aphrodisiac. Go buy that book.
Yes, exactly.
Not enough people. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go buy that book. Seriously. But yeah, so check out the Summit City Comic Con on May 22nd.
That was this weekend.
We're just back from that. I still got it on the brain. So Summit City
many cons.
SummitCityComicCon.com.
On season has begun.
Thank you, Discount Comic Book Service, for sponsoring this episode.
Begun. This con season has.
What? Yes, it has. Yes.
What if it's not something's not the penultimate, but the one before that? Is there a word for that?
No, the one before that.
The one before the penultimate. Yeah, that one.
The sleuth ultimate.
Tri ultimate. Ex Machina 48.
Trilateral.
We're just saying words now. Ex Machina 48, I believe 50 is the last issue, is out, and shit is all coming to a head. Now, you remember last time that we talked about this issue, we said, hey, Tony Harris's stuff looks a little more rough in this one. And I was like, I'm cool with it. And Ron was like, I don't know if I am. And now I'm a little more like, I believe in Ron said what he said.
Well, this issue represents, I'm so glad, I was so afraid you were going to praise it and love it, but this issue was just like, it was like a graph of like steady, steady drop. Like, and it got to the point where there were some pages where I didn't even think he finished drawing.
I was really disappointed because I recently reread the first sort of deluxe edition of this, and I was like, I really, really enjoyed that. And to shit the bed on the last run.
It's so sad.
It's like a marathoner who collapses right before the finish line.
Yeah, oh, pretty much.
I mean,
yeah.
It really, and there are some pages in here that are close, but it was
there are moments that are close. There are some figures that are like what we would expect.
And there just looks like Alex Maleev.
Yes, exactly. Like, really, it's the page before the men's room where with the cops in front of the computer. We're just like, what the fuck? Like, seriously, like, it's like he drew half the page.
I think that the story's good.
Yeah.
I think it's all going really well. And again, like, this is my last Brian K. Vaughan, who is a guy who's worked I love.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I've heard rumors.
Whatever.
But,
okay, it's been years, though. I mean, our second show. No, I'm not done with comics. Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying your California villa. I miss your fucking comic books. And honestly, like, make the issue late, but make the issue good, man.
Yeah, that's the whole point of it. And it's funny because there's a couple of scenes. Like, there's a scene where Mitchell Hundred and Wiley, his second guy, when they're in the office together, and it's like a long shot pulled back, and like he just didn't even draw their faces.
No.
Oh, it's like it's bizarre.
And that was a good scene.
Yeah.
Like, I think he wrote the shit out of this.
And the last page looked great.
It did.
It looked great. It was just like, what the fuck? It's like,
wow, this is a theme because Superman: The Last Stand of New Krypton, which was drawn by Pete Woods, who drew the last miniseries, that was a drastic change for the worse.
Really?
In art.
I don't know if I did. I actually liked it. I mean, Pete Woods' art is kind of weird for me. It's like, he's like got a strong design sense, but sometimes things look a little like. You remember those Chuck Austin War Machine books?
Yeah, the really black and white ones.
Yep, they remind me a little of that.
The style is radically different. He had a very thin line in the last book, and it was very open and like kind of in this the vein of Gary Frank or Kevin Maguire. Not a lot of lines, not a lot of shadow. Very bright. And this is a very different style of art.
But what I liked about this, it was more that I felt really slighted by the end of the maxi series before this. That it was like 12 issues and it had no ending. And I was like, what the fuck was that? And I feel like I was like, okay, well, this is the end of that story. And I was pretty happy about that. But it's also now a crossover with a bunch of other stuff. I wish it had just been one series. I think it would have been really good like that. It would have been a nice big trade at some point. But
Newsflash, Superman's back, by the way.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things I really liked about it. But in the same vein, look at the cover. Andy Kubert, obviously, people really like it. Look at the weird face neck thing that got going on with it.
Yeah. The art's this is the week of weird art.
Look at the right arm as opposed to the left arm.
Yeah, no, the perspective's all off. His right bicep is huge.
This is that's bad.
Yeah.
And I looked and I was like, well, who did that? And I was like, Kubert, you're the people who teach people how to draw. you don't have this, Ron, do you?
No, I don't. Right, no,
take
no.
go. I want you to go take a look at this cover at some point. It's a little inexcusable.
Yeah,
is what's going on there. This looks like something I would have drawn when I was 17. You know what I mean? Like, not good. Not good.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's bad.
I enjoyed
the story.
That
was good. The story was good. Superman's back. He's been Commander L for a year, and now he's quit that job, and now he's redone the Superman outfit. So everyone is complaining about that. Can now shut up. And it's been fun. And Lex Luthor shows up, and he's teamed with Brainiac, and it's been a good story.
It has.
It's been a really good story over the course of this year. What I really liked this week, though, after Batman and Robin, was Ultimate Spider-Man number 8.
Yeah,
you're not wrong.
Which it was so funny.
Yeah.
And he should not ever let these characters go. I mean, he writes a great Spider-Man. Bendis' real strength is people bouncing off of each other.
Yep.
And bounce Spider-Man with the Human Torch and with Iceman,
it's working.
Nova is it really entertaining.
Yep.
And then put him up against a team of teenage girls, supervillains, and that's even better.
Yeah.
Because you get all the hormones racing and Iceman hitting on everybody. Just fantastic.
There's something about the tapping into the Spider-Man and his amazing friends vibe. You know, like that the last page with the three of them with, you know, Spider-Man, Iceman, and the Human Torch going back into the city. It puts a smile on my face that was on the whole issue that I read this. It was great. And who knows if we're going to see. So Rick Jones, you know, gets tapped to be a Galactus Herald and becomes Nova and flies away. So who knows if we'll see him again. But this story was great. Did you see when they went to the Project Pegasus base and the full page of the girls? And you see in the background, there's the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah.
So. Well, I imagine they're setting up some sort of Galactus story.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing that for a while.
They're going to fix it?
I don't know.
After they blew it in Ultimate already? The Galactus was a swarm of locusts or whatever it was.
That was Warren Ellis, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Oh, God.
But I imagine Bendis has been setting it up for a while with his Origins mini. But I love this. I love very fun. This was the kind of stuff you want every week in comics.
Yep.
I liked Ghost Project number 1, which was Oni Press's new book and we did a Don't Miss show on it. Where we talked to the great Joe Harris, but for me, it was the Steve Rolston art.
Steve Rolston very rarely disappoints.
Yeah. I mean, this was a killer issue art wise.
Yeah.
I love that not only is he's a great, you know, character drawer, but his panels are bursting with depth. I mean, every shot in a room or long shot, there's stuff everywhere. And it just really creates the whole mood of the environment and everything.
He's one of those pure cartoonists. Like he does good storytelling. He does good characters. You know, I want to see. I wish I could see more of him than we do. You know, he just doesn't show up enough.
Yeah.
Too busy drawing Stephen King books, probably.
Yeah, probably. So, Day Tripper number 4 from Vertigo came out, and this was my pick of the week. And we've been talking about it in the first 3 issues. We're trying to figure out what the series is, and I figured it out. It's new ways to rip my heart out and stomp all over it.
I was a little bummed at the end of this one. I was like, I don't know how many more issues of this I can do.
Oh my!
Well, this one was particularly bum-worthy. I mean, the other ones.
My God! Yeah. Well, so basically, it seems as if these are all just different divergence of the same guy's life. Like we said, that's the premise. Is this guy Bras de Oliveira Domingos in Brazil, and there are just these different paths and avenues his life can take. And in this particular one, he's older and he's got a writing career and he's got a wife and they're about to have a baby, and then his father dies, and then he drops dead of a heart attack. And just like my God, this just killed me. It just killed me. And I'm amazed at how emotional it can be.
That's the best thing about this book.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, you know him now in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but I thought it was really good, but it was never up for pick of the week because I was just like, I'm just too bummed out now. I don't want to keep doing this.
This one was a bummer. This one was a bum story, but it was not in a bad way. I mean, like, in the same way that the last issue, like, we talked about the moment with seeing the girl in the store and the smile and like that emotion.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what Fabio Luna and Gabriel Ba are doing with their art to make a connection to these emotional moments is really special.
Yeah. They are the most sensitive men in the world.
They're Brazilian. They get lots of women.
So, in the
hot ones.
Yeah.
We should get off of this topic before we get whatever it is we're going to go to is not good. Amazing Spider-Man, good. Sort of for me, was in the same vein as some of the other ones we're talking about. Like, I really like Paul Azaceta on some of the other ones, but this one I didn't think it was as good.
Oh, I thought this issue was great. I finished this issue and I was like, God damn it, I'm a Spider-Man fan now. Like, really? Like, I'm like, and this issue ended on it's a down note. I mean, this is the issue basically that, you know, Peter gets fired from his photographer job by Jonah and he gets busted trying to help Jonah. And I thought this issue was also emotional and I don't know. Maybe you're right on the Azaceta art. I didn't notice it. I didn't complain about it. But I just thought it was just written so well and just flows so well. And this Vulture character sucks. Like, and I think they know it. But somehow Wade was able to make a compelling story using him. And every issue of Spider-Man has me waiting for the next one. So, yeah.
I don't like this Vulture. That's all.
Oh, the Vulture sucks. The character sucks. Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I liked. I don't like what Peter did, but I don't know if that's because I don't like what he did or because I don't like that they had him do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just too stupid for him.
Yeah. Well, they even said at the end, he's like, you know, I did the wrong thing for the right reasons or something like that, you know, like, and it was, yeah, I did a stupid thing for all the right reasons, you know, and it puts him, and basically it's the classic put Spider-Man behind the eight ball. And if something's, you know, like, nothing can go right for the guy, unfortunately. And now it's his professional career is taking a hit, you know, so. I think the Vulture is a bad character because anytime you have a character who can't talk, it's just he's useless.
No, he's mindless. And it's impossible to care or relate to a mindless character, I think. Yeah. You know, the same.
Plus, the original Vulture is one of the, you know, great classic villains.
Adrian Toomes. Yep.
So, from Staten Island.
Yeah. So, but whatever. What can you do? So, those are the comics that came out this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can check out all the ones that came out. You do your pull list. And then when you come back, you can rate them and review them. We have a couple of user reviews we want to share with everybody. The first review comes from The Next Champion, who wrote a review of Punisher Max number 5 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. At the time of our recording of this, about 0.26% of y'all made it your pick of the week because everybody else was making it Batman and Robin. And Next Champion says, this is a solid ending to be sure. Lots of messed up things happened that I didn't see coming. Jason Aaron is perfect at just making horrible things happen. What happens to the Kingpin's family? Messed up. How the Punisher deals with the Mennonite? Predictable, but still messed up. The tease for the next story? Not messed up, but damn, that image makes me excited for the future. Basically, all around, it was a solid issue. I struggle with this, Jason Aaron, Steve Dillon, Punisher Max, because my impression of Punisher Max is it's like the realistic Punisher, whatever, and this just feels like another ultimate. You know, like, it's, we're just doing the Punisher again. You know, don't get me wrong, it's good.
No, but it's definitely a different direction.
Yeah, it ended with the reveal was with Bullseye showing up, and it's Bullseye with the Target tattoo in his forehead, like the, you know, the shitty early 2000s that they did for the movie.
That movie did so much harm.
It's a single character. Bullseye had one of the classic costumes. Yeah. Classic costumes, and putting that stupid fucking Target that Kevin Smith and then you know the movie used, and it kind of ruined
it. Didn't the movie use it first, and then they adopted it?
Yeah, with Target. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't think
that goddamn movie echoes through eternity.
I didn't think Colin Farrell was that bad in that movie.
No,
he wasn't. Actually, he was great.
He was actually one of the best parts of the movie, but just the whole design. He was one of the best design characters.
But on Punisher Max, I just don't know what they're – I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong, but it just feels like I've read this before.
Well, it's the Punisher.
Yeah. Well, and the Kingpin too. I mean, it was, you know – yeah, so I don't know.
I mean, I love Jason Aaron.
That's right about that. Yeah.
You do. Caroline.
What are you going to do?
That's our answer to everything. What are you going to do?
As my landlord said to me one day, yeah, you're going to do what you're going to do. I was like, that's true.
It's awesome.
He is awesome. He's like 60, but he's built better than me. He's in better shape than anyone. He could ride a bike from here to Pennsylvania, not break a sweat. Oh, Caroline wrote about Breaking Into Comics, The Marvel Way, number 1, and gave the story a 3 out of 5 in the art, 3 out of 5 at time of pick of the week, 0.02%. So I'm going to guess one person. said this was their pick of the week. I wasn't sure what this comic was when I saw it on the shipping list, but I was going to give it a pass. But my friend mentioned that there was a fun Spider-Woman story by Bendis, so I decided to check it out. Basically, as far as I can tell, the story and this were drawn by artists discovered by a Marvel talent search. However, the writers are established comic writers, which led to some pretty interesting combination. Basically, I loved 3 and 6 and liked 5 and could have done without the others. Those are the numbers of the story, because she enumerated them in more detail. For an anthology, especially a newcomer's anthology, it's not a bad record with a variety of stories. I bet most Marvel readers will find something to enjoy here.
Except that, did you guys see this?
No.
We were in the store, we're in the comic store, we ran over, we're like, oh my god, breaking the comics the Marvel way! And we opened it, and it was just like, okay, a story! Okay, another story! Okay, another story!
Yeah.
Great, another story! Great, another story! Where's How Do I Break Into Comics the Marvel way?
That's the secret.
Yeah, exactly!
I did the same thing. I was like, oh, we'll have something interesting in here. These seem to be short stories.
Yeah, just like, and then so
that's the dirty secret. You can't break into Marvel.
Yeah, and like, and so yes, it was, and basically, and I went back, I read the first page, and it was, this was, these were all stories drawn by recent artistic talent that C.B. Sobolski has found in his, you know, kind of talent searching. And in the back, there's some, you know, interesting comments by the artists with, you know, what they've been doing, and then some comments from established artists as to how, you know, they're getting started in the industry. No point was there. I thought it was going to be like, hey, you want to be an artist or writer? You know, here's script pages, draw a story, or, you know, this is the old, you know, How to Draw Comics the Marvel way, because they use the same. Yeah, they use the same. Book, yeah. They use the same header, you know, like cover design, like the logo and stuff. At least print a page of CB's tweets. And which I think they're going to do in issue number 2.
Yeah, they're doing an upcoming issue of it.
They totally dropped the ball on this, if you ask me. I mean, this is not breaking into comics the Marvel way. This was Young Guns or whatever the fuck they want to call it. You know, like, it just made me laugh because we're all sitting there. We're turning the page. We're just like, where? How do you break in?
Where's the part where we break in?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it made me laugh. So
you get to know a man named Chester. Anyway, we want to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of the iFanboy Pick of the Week show. Audible is the place for audiobooks. You can download them to your iPod, just like you did this podcast, or any device you want to listen to them. There are over 60,000 titles of audiobooks across all genres. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy. You can sign up for a free audiobook and a 14-day trial. We like to pick a book to highlight that you could, and I thought I would pick the book that I'm currently reading, which is Killing Pablo, The Hunt for the World's Greatest Outlaw by Mark Bowden. It's a story about the hunt for Pablo Escobar in the early 90s, and it's by the same guy who wrote Black Hawk Down. I find it completely fascinating because I wasn't quite paying attention to anything back then because I was a kid, and Pablo Escobar was really, really, really rich. Yeah. And
yes.
The story of what Colombia was like at the time is fascinating. It's really, really good stuff. So I really dug that book. So you can check that out.
Yeah, you can get that for free. So,
yes.
Audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy.
You don't even have to read. You can just sit there, mouth open, like
and just do cocaine while you read the list of the books.
Nice. The good role models. Awesome.
We're not role models.
I know we're not.
Let's do some emails. The first email is from Brandon, and Brandon says, I've read most of Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, a character I've always had an affinity for since I was a kid. Swamp Thing, that is, and Alan Moore. But for some reason, I never started reading Hellblazer. I'd like to change that. I picked up random issues here and there. I've read a few of that John Constantine graphic novels. I dug the hell out of the film adaptation, too. So my question is this. Would you suggest returning to issue 1, or is there a solid jumping on point that's occurred recently? I love the character, but I'd like to change that love of Constantine from theoretical and unsupported to actual, well-documented.
So this is just a variation of where should I start with?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh?
I feel like I've written this or put it in pod. I know I have.
No, that was Green Lantern.
No, I've done Hellblazer. I'm positive. Okay. I sat on that.
He did a mini on it. But before Josh gets in, as someone who's never read, Josh has read a lot of Constantine. I've not read a lot of Constantine, but I just started reading stuff. You can do that with Constantine.
Yeah, it's not one of those kind of continuity based. There is sort of a larger continuity that goes on, but it's not terribly important. You don't need it. I would say. There's some of the Ennis and Steve Dillon books go in an order, and those are important to read in an order. But you kind of – each writer brought a different sort of flavor to it. And I'd say you pick up the ones that you want to read. But don't worry so much about the order, which is good because it's very difficult to tell what the order is from the books because yes. The trade dress are not helpful.
You know, 2 years ago, Josh lent me all of his Garth Ennis trades, which were – there was like 5 or 6 of them. And I read those without a problem, without knowing any backstory. And I read the Jamie Delano Jock OGN that just came out without a problem, and I've got a random Azzarello, I think it's Corbin trade in here somewhere that I read without a problem. So Hellblazer is structured that way. I don't think you, I mean, there is a a light larger tale around the whole thing, I think, you know.
Sort of.
But I mean, other than that, you don't really need to know anything.
It's not really told in order anyway. Like, there's some stories. Basically, every story is this. There's a demon, and John goes and tricks it, and his friends get fucked over in the process. That's every John Constantine story. There's different variations on it, but that's basically how they go. You know, I my favorite are the Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon ones, and even some of the Garth Ennis ones on their own. I'd say go read Dangerous Habits. That's the first one. The movie was kind of based on that. And then, you know, you can skip around. It's totally cool. I've read most of it, and it's not a problem. So
those Garth Ennis trades are really good.
They're really, really, really
good. They're really good, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right, so on to the next email. Email comes from Rocco, who says, so I'm getting married in the near future, and I need your guys' vast knowledge of all things comic-related to help me out. Uh-oh.
Awesome.
My fiance isn't one for tradition, so instead of opting for the traditional engagement rings and wedding band, she's decided that we should both get something different that we'd actually want to wear and have fun with instead of boring old gold bands and diamonds.
This is going to go badly.
Lucky guy. Her only stipulation is that I cannot have a Green Lantern ring, as that would just look silly and she would not be able to be seen in public with me.
Wait.
She did, however, agree to let me get a custom-made Legion of Superheroes ring. The only problem is I'm having a hard time finding someone to make the custom piece of awesomeness. Would you guys happen to know where the Smallville team commissioned their Legion rings from, or anyone reputable that would do the commission would be able to commission one for me?
I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah. What is it about the Green Lantern ring that is especially silly, where the Legion ring is not silly? Because just give me some of the Legion superhero names.
Matter Eater Lad.
Saturn Girl.
Lad. Anytime there's a lad involved.
Yep.
Bouncing Boy.
Yep. Well, and the thing is that I don't know, dude. That's not a good idea. It's not a good idea. I'm sorry. I know it's not. I know it's, you know, not, you know, you're in the time of the geek and all stuff like that. But fucking hey, dude, you're gonna be, you know, in your 50s wearing a fucking Legion ring, really?
Are you a big Legion fan? I mean, I guess if like you're a huge Legion fan.
If you're Paul Levitz doesn't wear a fucking ring.
I mean, I don't mean to take a swerve with this one, but. There are some things, you know, and you can be non-traditional, but like the Legion?
Yeah. I
don't even think it's the Legion, just any kind of superhero ring as the, I mean, if you're really into it, I can understand, but she doesn't seem to be really into it, even though she said you could get whatever you want.
Well, that's what I love. It's like, you can get whatever you want, except that one.
Except the one you want.
That's a telling. Move.
Right. Yeah. Now that said, though, I'm pretty sure I saw recently there's a new set of Green Lantern rings coming out that are supposed to be like super super nice and like real and like, you know.
Here's the thing, though. She said you can't get a Green Lantern ring.
Right? Can you get a Red Lantern ring?
That's not a good one.
Yeah, loophole.
You should get the Hope one. You should get the blue. I think.
Yeah. Or the Sluts one.
The purple. Yeah. The Star Sapphire. Yeah.
What about a Flash ring?
It's a bad idea.
Listen, I have a Green Lantern tattoo, and I wouldn't get a Green Lantern ring.
Yeah.
If that helps.
That's because you have the tattoo.
I know, but like, I don't know. Like, the wedding, I don't feel like injecting pop culture into.
Yeah.
It's my marriage.
For all the pop culture stuff on your wedding.
No, not the wedding. I'm sorry, but like
the marriage.
The marriage, okay. The idea of the thing. Gordon the intern, he's got a very interesting wedding ring, but it's not like, you know, Crew Jones from Rad.
Right. Yeah, he's a unique, and he's designed, he gave a ring to his wife that he designed, and yeah, I mean, yeah. That said, I'm looking on Google, and I just searched Legion of Superheroes ring, and there's a bunch of rings out there, so you could probably find it.
Yeah, but they're made of pewter, and they turn your hand
Well, that's the problem.
You got to find a jeweler who makes custom rings, and they can probably, if you give them a design, they can make it for you if you really want it.
If you really
want it, then go for it. That's what I say.
It won't help you fly.
Yeah. Whew. All right. So if you have an email and if you want us to condemn your wedding, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, and we'll be glad to judge you.
Those guys at iFanboy are a bunch of wet blankets.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I'm all about having fun, especially at the weddings. And we said that. I mean, the little things you can do at the wedding to make it fun and the cake topper or something like that. But like something like that, you spend a boatload of money. And really, are you going to want, you know, are you going to want it in 25 years? And number two, I worry about this woman because she said, want you to have fun with it, do whatever you want. No boring gold bands and diamonds. But there's a stipulation. I worry about that. So,
well, you know, the other thing is there's a
contingent. It's not going to work. You guys, I'm sorry, Rocco. It's not going to work.
There's a contingent of people who want to go out and have the Klingon wedding.
Right.
And I am not that, but I get that. That's real. Yeah. That happens. You know, you want to dress up like Amidala and, you know, Ewan McGregor, then you know, more power to you.
Mannequin. Come on.
Yeah, mannequin.
Yeah, sorry. It's all out of my head now.
Yeah. It never happened.
Never happened. What are midichlorians? I don't know. I literally don't know.
Shut your dirty mouth.
All right. All right, so on to the voicemail. Our first voicemail has got a question about one of our favorite writers.
Hey, guys. This is Brian from San Antonio, Texas. And I just had a quick question for you concerning Greg Rucka. I happen to love his stuff. Didn't really get turned on to him, and honestly, until around Checkmate when you guys were talking about it. But from then, I've pretty much gone back and picked up most of the stuff that he's done, from Queen and Country, Whiteout. I even realized that going through some of my back issues that he's done some of my favorite runs on books, like when he took over Detective Comics right after No Man's Land. That was one of the better runs. My question is how come nobody seems to either recognize that he exists, or it just seems like whenever I bring him up at the shop, everybody kind of looks at me like they don't know who I'm talking about. You know, aside from his run on Detective, you know, Gotham Central was amazing. Checkmate was amazing. So what's up with that? Is there some sort of grand conspiracy against Greg Rucka or something? You know, I don't understand it. I think he's one of the best writers, and it seems like he never gets his due.
Brian, don't worry. You're not crazy. Those people you're talking to are crazy. because Rucka is great. Rucka's, and I think doesn't everyone know that? I mean,
let me ask you one question. What kind of rings are those guys wearing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, I could see where he doesn't carry the same kind of weight that Johns is carrying now or Grant Morrison carries. He's almost very yeoman in his, you know, he comes in and does a good job, does quality work. But I've yet to read anything bad by Greg Rucka.
He's heady.
Ever. Yeah.
I think that there was a time when he was definitely considered among that top pantheon. I mean, from a comic shop perspective, he probably doesn't sell as much anymore for whatever reason.
Although they say how Jeff Loeb sells comics and all this stuff like that. I don't know if Greg Rucka sells comics in that way, but I mean, he should. Detective.
I agree with you. He's easily my top five, probably top three, you know, favorite guys writing comics. So, you know, you're not alone, and he's real good. You know, hey, at least he's getting work.
Yeah,
he's not.
The guys who are real good don't always sell books, and that's the stagnant nature of the market, which is a whole rant I'm going to go on before I quit the show.
Who's the Red Hulk, though? I must know. I have to know.
All right. So if you have a question about a creator, you can call us, leave us a voicemail, 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Leave your name, where you're from. Try to keep it to about 30 seconds or so. And people call in. It's been a little light on the voicemail this past week. So I know we skipped it the past couple weeks. So make sure you call in, get your questions on the show.
Maybe we'll give something to a really good voicemail.
Maybe we will. Ooh, what about that? Interesting. Huh? Interesting. I don't know how we'll do that, but maybe. Okay.
That's right. I got books.
What logistically, that's a nightmare, but okay.
Figure it out. Hey, all right.
Call me. Emerald City Comic Con has just happened, theoretically, in this.
Yeah,
it
was
great. Awesome.
It had a great time. Fantastic.
What happened at that panel? I mean, my
Remember
God.
Remember that thing with the guy, Ron?
Thank you to everybody who came out to the panel, came and said hello to us. We had an awesome time, so we appreciate it. Love Seattle. Go to Emerald City Comic Con next year. Make your plans now.
Get over and buy some shirts. We got shirts for you. You want shirts? We got Battle Pug shirt and the exclusive Fear Agent shirt. The only Fear Agent t-shirt that you can get, as approved by Rick Remender, drawn by Jerome Pena, and designed by someone very special.
Yeah, and you can get that at ifanboy.com/store.
And don't forget to check out being an iFanboy member if you want to help support this. I know that there was all sorts of news about graphically and all that stuff, but you guys are still making it happen. I don't want you to think that we don't need you. Like we said before, you really help make iFanboy happen and pay the bills, quite honestly. You can be a member for $4 a month or $42 a year, and you'll get a prize pack and a sticker, button, things like that, and a comic book. Don't forget that comic book. That's key. Or $10 a month or $100 a year, and that's sort of the higher end, and you'll get a T-shirt along with that. And with those, you'll be eligible for all the gifts and stuff we've given out and prizes, and there's a lot that has happened and a lot more coming, so don't miss out on that stuff.
We're probably
I want to reiterate the comic book is you don't always get a good one.
Right, but that's part of the fun.
It's totally
in fact,
part of
we
the
think
fun.
That's kind of fun to yeah. send you a really crappy
one. I love it when I see people on Twitter talking about the comic they got and what they thought of it and stuff like that. So please, you know, like spread the word when you get a comic and tell
it. Doesn't reflect on you. We don't yeah. send you back.
We're not deciding. It's totally random. We're reaching into the long.
Every once in a while. I mean, like when we saw Tom Cater's envelope, he got a bad comic book. He got maybe the worst comic I've ever had submitted to me.
But
not saying what it is.
And we're gearing up for some more big giveaways. And also, as you know, if you haven't become a member yet, you've been thinking about it. Now that we're working with the Fuxa Graphically, there's gonna be some cool stuff coming your way. So definitely become a member. So
Josh saw the leading tower of giveaways when he was over.
Frightening. It's a load bearing stack.
The Department of Building and Safety is going to come in. No,
he won't let him in the door. He's like, no, just stay over there. Stay over there. And like, what's that creaking? What are the absolute – go away. Go away.
Is that the basement?
Yeah. Thunk. Just what happened? My room fell through. I actually wanted to take a quick moment before we do any of this stuff and just say thank you to everybody out there for all the really kind well wishes and congratulations I got over the past couple of weeks from when my son was born. And – it was a little hard for a little while, but everything's okay now, and it's incredibly heartening to have so many people who don't really know me send me so many like really kind words and things like that. I had people send me gifts and stuff, and that's amazing, and it really, really touched me. And so, in addition to you know, just all the stuff that you guys normally do, I just wanted to say thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Cool.
That's
you're
all.
Welcome.
Not you. You didn't do shit.
Nice.
Awkward.
Anyway, awkward. Moving on.
Check out fanboy.com. You can read Josh's Pick of the Week review, and you can check out all of our in-depth comic discussion, the latest news, the latest Avenger you've never heard of. All of it is happening at fanboy.com. You can go to fanboy.com/about for our social network links. Be our friends on all of our different social network websites. And we have a video show that comes out every Wednesday on ifanboy.com or vision3.com/ifanboy. Last week was a look at inkers, letterers, and colorists. It was a damn fine show, if I can say so myself.
And which I thought was interesting because we talked about some letters and colorists and inkers. And Chris Eliopoulos, one of the letters, friend of the show, he tweeted thanking us for mentioning him. But the real unsung heroes, he said, are the production people who put the comics together. So I think that's our next show that we got to do. We're going to start talking about the guy in the mailroom.
I go into Quark.
The receptionists, the security guards,
the accountants,
and the interns,
the lunch truck guy on the corner.
A lot of people involved in making a comic book. People, a lot of people.
Yes,
Vladek, he's good.
Next week we're doing a war vault, so we're going into the vault, all about books involving war.
What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again. If you got a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Any questions, comments, any thoughts you want to share with us, we love hearing from you. So write and call in, please.
Write us an iTunes review. It's a really good way for people to discover this show. If you've written one but you haven't written a review for the video show or the Don't Miss podcast or anything like that, maybe go in and do that. Or better yet, if you're in the comic shop and you hear some people talking and you think, hey, I bet they'd like this show, let them know about it. Or, you know, just anybody. Spread the word. That is really, really helpful to us, and that's a very easy thing for you to do. So thank
that's
you.
The key. Yes, and we forgot to mention the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast, which is on a separate feed. If you go to iTunes, you can search for iFanboy, and it'll find it there. And be sure you subscribe to it. Every Monday, come out. We're talking to a creator about a specific book coming out this week that we mentioned earlier. Josh talked to Joe Harris about the Ghost Project number one from Oni last week. And this Monday, Chris, our good friend Chris, is talking to Tom Fowler about Mysterious the Unfathomable. The trade paperback comes out.
Go get that.
Yeah. We got an advanced copy of it, and it's a nice trade. It's a good package. So So check out Don't Miss and write a review of that and just swarm over there because that's a good show too. So all right then. Well, I got nothing.
I know.
I'm done.
We collapsed much like the art in Ex Machina.
Yeah, exactly.
Normally we're pretty good when like one of us goes quiet and somebody picks up the slack. And at that time we were all just like, I hope someone else says something.
Yeah. Well, that's a good time to say goodbye. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Thank you.